This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, a program that I hope during these uncertain times will help you remember that our country has faced uncertain times before. And when we face our challenges together with faith and hope and unity, we can and we will overcome. That's what 16 million Americans in uniform and countless more standing behind them back home accomplished in the 1940s. And today's special episode marks the 75th anniversary of Operation Varsity, the largest airborne assault of all time when it comes to a single day and a single place. On Tuesday, March 24th at 11:30 a.m. Eastern or 8:30 Pacific, you can watch a live stream of the official commemoration, sans the crowd, from the National World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. You'll hear the big picture and a few examples of the heroism that made that effort a success. But here on Hometown Heroes, we get to explore the memories of some of those involved. We'll hear from a paratrooper who jumped that day in a bit, but for now, another glider pilot. Mel Pliner had just recovered from Operation Market Garden in the Netherlands when he and other glider pilots were moved into position for what would be a 1,300 glider assault on the Rhine.
It was shortly after that that the 4th 30th Troop Carrier Group transferred over to France to an air base A-55 just outside of Fontainebleau, famous church there.
Right.
And more training. There was a wrecked B-26 on the base off the side. When I was assigned my Waco glider, I took some tools and went over there, and I got out a couple of pieces of armor plate.
From the B-26?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I put one under my seat and one under my feet in the glider that I was assigned. This time, I had 13 troops, and I was assigned a co-pilot that was a washed-out cadet. He didn't make it in power pilot, so he transferred to the glider program. Mm-hmm. He had about 2 hours flight time. Never been in combat.
Uh-huh.
Came time to take off. We were waiting in line, and one of the troops fired a rifle. They're holding a rifle like that.
Yeah.
And he pulled the trigger, fired a round. I got out of my seat to check to see if he'd have cut any of my control wires, my control cables. Fortunately, he didn't. I said, "You guys put your rifles on safe, all of you," which they did. Okay. Came time we took off. This time, we're going for the Rhine invasion. Get into formation of echelon four to right. Okay, we get ready to approach the Rhine River, drop down to 500. As we cross the river, I couldn't see the Weitzel. But before we took off, I was assigned a bazooka, and my co-pilot had a vest, 3 rockets in front, 3 rockets behind for the bazooka.
Right.
We were going to land close to a main intersection highway where we were supposed to join other troops to set up a defense to keep any resupplies from getting to the troops
right.
in the front line.
Cutting their supply line.
Cross the Rhine, drop down, green light, red light, and I cut loose. And here's a big field, I don't know how many acres, big power lines with the high towers across the field and gliders. Some of them hit the wires. So I figured, well, okay, I cut loose. I'm heading for that, and I got a place where there's room for me to land my glider. I'm 200 feet high, and I'm holding the wheel like this. And some krauts, a bird shooter. Now, you know, most of the krauts were aiming at the pilot's compartment, and it was going to the tail section. This guy's a bird shooter. You know how you lead birds?
Yeah.
He was a bird shooter. I'm sitting like that, and he gets me right through the arm between the radius and the other.
Still have a scar.
See
there?
That?
Uh-huh.
That's where it came out.
Oh.
I said, "Take over, I'm hit."
So this is your co-pilot who's never done this before.
He froze.
Can't function.
I pull up the spoiler and held it up with my left foot, and I landed it with my left hand and my right foot.
Because your right hand, you can't do anything
my
with.
My right hand hit. Fell down.
It's useless.
Into shock.
So you're landing this glider one-handed.
One hand and one foot. Of course, I was only about 200 feet high. When I did that, evidently, I took and wiped out the gear on my right side. Just came right off. Because over there, the fields, about every 15 furrows, was a deep one to carry any moisture off the field instead of washing the grass off over to a ravine, a little ravine over there. Came to stop with the left wheel in the ravine and my right wing about a foot or two above the ground. By that time, all the troops had gotten out, and my co-pilot came to life, and he got out. I had on a flak vest. Now, a flak vest, it's got two snaps on each shoulder.
Right.
And it's got a belt around the waist with snaps. Supposed to be able to give it one good jerk, and it's supposed to fall off.
Right.
Well, with my arm in shock, I'm pulling with my left hand, and it didn't come off. And I got scared, because with that thing on, you don't move very
it's
I gave
heavy.
It a second pull, and it came off, and I got out and got underneath.
Spurt, spurt.
This wound in your arm is spraying blood everywhere.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I got out to get out my first aid kit.
Because you're all alone. Everybody else is left.
Got out, put a band-aid, I put it around here to stop the bleeding.
Uh-huh. You had to give yourself first aid.
Yeah. About 30, 40 minutes, my co-pilot is lying on there. And this guy, he wants to get up and run. I says, hell, you wouldn't run 15, 20 feet and they'd shoot you. Because there was still a lot of rifle fire. But it wasn't too long after our troops started to take over. And the rifle fire started to just about quiet down. Shortly after that, a squad of American troops was crossing the field. I said, now's the time to get up and get in the middle of it. And we started yelling and screaming. And about 13 troops turned around with their rifles. American troops, hey, guy. But showed them the American flag on our shoulder. And we got in the middle of them. We got down to the ravine there. And there were other glider pilots there, troops. And there was a first aid guy. Mm-hmm. He saw I had this. He said, what happened to you? I said, I got one through the arm. He said, let me take a look. Took a look at it. Put some sulfur, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Wrapped it, gave me a sling. He said, how does it feel? I said, hurts like hell. He says, here's a morphine syringe. Stick it in your arm. And he says, it'll keep you from hurting, slow you down. I says, I don't want it. If I got to move out, I want to be able to move out, which we did. I started to head back towards the Rhine River. And in so doing, I'm walking up the ravine, and I come across a house. And right in front of the house is a German doctor with two troops standing there watching them. And he's got a steamer trunk with all kinds of medications and operating tools. Could have performed major surgery there. And he's working on a paratrooper. The paratrooper's got his foot up on the back of a chair with his middle toe missing. Now, whether he shot it off or what, probably.
To get himself out of the line of fire?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doctor's sewing it up. And he's got a cigar in his mouth and a .45 on his foot. He says, Doc, he says, if you hurt me, I'm going to blow your brains out. Doctor doesn't understand a word of English.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, sewed him up, gave him a couple of pairs of crutches, and off he went. Called me over, looked, took that off. He went over there, and he got a big stick with something on it, stuck it in there. And I thought he was going to just, I was just dying. Just wrap it, which he did. Made my way over to the shores of the Rhine River where there was a first aid station and there was a nurse in there. What happened to you, Lieutenant? I said, I got one in the arm. Took it off, look at it, more powder. By then the bleeding was starting to slow down. Bleeding a little bit, but it was a spurt, spurt, spurt.
Mm-hmm.
And what had happened, it went through the radiation ulna and it didn't break any bones, but it hit the nerve to the thumb. You see the difference in the size?
Ah, okay.
Hit the nerve to the thumb.
Uh-huh.
She looked at it like that. By that time, it was starting to get dark. She said, take a towel there and get out there and find a place to lie down, get some sleep, and tomorrow we'll get you out of here across the river. So I take a blanket. By now, it's dark. A couple of guys out there. Pardon me. So I lay the blanket down. It's dark. And I lie down in that thing. And I bring it over me. And it feels like there's a 2x4 right underneath my back. By that time, she had given me a shot, and I fell asleep. I got up the next morning to see what the hell was under my back. Well, you know how mud slides up between dual wheels on a truck and dries up? Hell, I could have ooched for 40 miles and never got away from it. But anyway, I got up, gave it a towel back. By that time, they had some ducks. You know what a duck is?
Yeah.
Come across back and forth. So I got in the front seat of the duck, and they had some stretcher guys. they put in the duct. And across the river, we went to a real first aid station where they had some doctors, but they didn't have any x-ray machines. So when the doctor looked at mine, he figured, well, it must have hit one of the bones.
They figured to get hit there with their bones so tightly worked there, it had to break something.
So he put it in a cast.
Uh-huh.
So here I am in a cast. Well, by that time, there was a little airstrip there. They were flying troops out of there. And he said, what hospital do you want to go to, in Paris or London? I says, London. So I was flown, and when I got to the hospital, they put me in a ward for bone fractures, stuff like that. And I was in a ward all by myself. I was there for 30 days.
Yeah.
During which time, the war in Europe was over. I figured I'll stay in London. And I had some English money, and after my money ran out and I couldn't withdraw any more money, I had to get on an airplane and fly over to Paris, where I called the base. They sent the jeep out. The jeep took me back to the air base where we were stationed. A-55. Place was deserted. Everybody was gone. Well, wasn't too long after that, troops started to come back when their money ran out. And we were told to get ready, that we were going to be transported by train to Brussels, where we were going to get a ship to take us back to the States. And when we got there, I was assigned some ship. I don't remember the name of it, but it was a cargo ship, one of the ships that they had built to bring goods over to England, you know. In the holds, the forward hold and the aft hold, they had built racks with beds in them, cots. And I don't know how many they could put in the forward and aft, but when we got on board the ship, I was assigned one of the holds with these cots in it. And so I climbed down the ladder, got into that thing where my B4 bag and a duffel bag that I had some stuff in. And after we left port, I got back up and I went up to the cruise compartment and I talked to the steward. And I said, did you know my father, David Pliner, Sunrise Steamship Laundry? He says, yeah, I knew him. Well, I'm his son. I'm one of the troops down in the hold. He says, bring your gear up here and we'll put you in one of the cruise quarters. And I went into one of the cruise quarters, and I don't know how long the trip across the ocean was, but I went to the slop chest, got a pair of jeans and a shirt, and I was one of the crew for the duration of the trip. Had a nice place to eat. Ate with the crew three meals a day. We were about a couple of hours out of New York City when we were coming into the harbor. And I figured, well, I better get back down there. So I changed back into my uniform. I got back there and said, where the hell have you been? I said, none of your business. You know, I never felt myself as a hero. I felt I was trained to do a job, and that's what I did. I look at it this way. The reason that I survive is two things, my training and the man upstairs. I felt confident that, you know, once we took off, I could find a field I could land, which I did.
Even with one hand. That was glider pilot Mel Pliner, who decades after his service in World War II got to visit the National World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., thanks to Honor Flight Southern Nevada. Unlike his glider journeys in the war, this wasn't a one-way mission. This aircraft had power, and he wasn't the one who had to land it. That mission triggered his adrenaline in a different way.
That was an interesting trip of a lifetime. It was. I can't say how much I enjoyed that, or the people, well, the woman that was in charge, and the people that we traveled with. And when we came back from the honor flight, there were, I don't know, thousands of people lining the exit, holding their hands out, shake your hands.
How'd that make you feel?
Oh, that tall. That tall.
At the World War II Memorial, where they have that big wall of gold stars, and you know what it represents.
Yeah.
406,000. And you had a couple chances where that could have been you.
Yeah, that's right.
What did you think about when you were looking at that next to a daughter who wouldn't be here if you didn't survive?
That's right. Well, you know, again, I think to myself, if it hadn't been for training and men upset, I wouldn't be here. Mm-hmm. I think about that.
Again, that was Mel Pliner. You can link to his complete original interview at hometownheroesradio.com. And we're not done yet. When this special Operation Varsity 75th Anniversary Edition returns, we'll hear from one of the thousands of American paratroopers who descended along the Rhine River on March 24, 1945. It was his very first taste of combat, and we'll hear about it when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.